Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to see you all here. Thanks so much for coming, and we're delighted with your interest in the efforts that I think we're all making to have a more of a system of surveys in the United States. So what I want to talk about today is harmonizing federal, state, and local surveys and how it would contribute to research at NIH. And it may come as a surprise to you that it would contribute to research at NIH. So I'd like to spend a minute just going through who my co-authors are and what they represent. We're all staff people. I'm not a director, and I'm not even a leader at NCI. But we're all staff who, myself and Jeannie Olson at the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, work in population science divisions. And Partha Bhattacharya works at the National Institute on Aging, which tends to focus on populations rather than a specific disease, but they look at the older population. Alyssa works with me at the National Cancer Institute. And Barry Portnoy, who works in the Office of the Director, works in the Office of Disease Prevention, which is another cross-cutting population-based type of where they do population-based type of research. So I wanted to give you that introduction and background so you might see another side of NIH. I don't have any financial conflicts to disclose. Our research capacity at NIH and throughout the nation is limited by not having regularly collected high-quality population-based local data. And by and large, I think Rick made a strong argument that some of that has got to come from surveys, because not everybody is in the healthcare system, not everybody's putting claims into a system, and if you want to look at people who are uninsured and their health behaviors and their health outcomes, or people that don't go to the doctor, you're going to need to ask them about it and get a representative sample in order to be able to make any have any evidence about those people. And then, of course, you don't just want information on them. You want to be able to compare them to the rest of the population. So you really need to survey the whole population in order to be able to do that. Now, for many decades, we have been using the high-quality national data that ED's center collects, especially from the National Health Interview Survey and Haines and, of course, Vital Statistics. And we know about the associations between covariates in these national data. Just to provide an example, we know that cancer screening is strongly associated with having health insurance and having a usual source of health care. But what we don't know is where the people who are uninsured, who aren't getting these services, are located. We can't tell that from the national data. We know the covariates from the national data. We can't tell where these things are happening. So that's what these local surveys can provide. And the other thing they can provide, and you saw the social determinants of health graphic that Ed showed, is the context. We have information on the area from the census, but we also can get information on localities, and particularly counties, sometimes at a lower level of geography, but counties are important because that's where most of the health departments are located, at the county level. So this makes it very important to have local data, and also, well, I'll make that argument later. Okay. So public health action really occurs at the local level because of the county public health departments and because advocacy takes place at the local level. And the rules and regulations tend to have to do with the county or sometimes the state. But by and large, I mean, we really don't have that many federal regulations. So we need local data for all the reasons that I've listed up there. There's a lot of things that we can do with local data. We can do everything we've done with national data, but now we can see where these things are located, and that's what we need in order to address issues. And the other thing we can do, I just want to mention, is monitoring local, monitoring natural experiments. And by that, when policies come into play or new programs are introduced, it often we do not, we are not in a position to find out whether they worked or not. And we need that kind of evidence. It's absolutely critical moving forward for policymakers to have that kind of evidence, because they want to know what works and doesn't work so they can either continue to fund it or stop or introduce something in another place because it seemed to work in place one and maybe there are similarities. So these data are really important. So let me give you some background about why NCI and NIH would be interested in this. Well, since 1987, the National Cancer Institute started to collect cancer control data on the National Health Interview Survey. And we've had a contract with NCHS to do that ever since. And then in 1999, an outside advisory group was convened to provide recommendations. It was called the Surveillance Implementation Group. And they recommended that we enhance our ability to provide local and regional information. And this 1999 recommendation led to NCI taking the unusual step of funding a state-based survey. Until then, we'd only been using our national surveys to collect information. So since 1999, NCI's Division of Cancer Control and Population Sciences, where I work and several of my colleagues are here today as well, has supported the California Health Interview Survey, because CHIS provides estimates on small areas and small populations, which are rich in California, but for which we didn't have good estimates with the national data. And the other thing that was important and critical for NCI's support of the California Health Interview Survey was because Rick had made the decision to harmonize that CHIS data with the National Health Interview Survey items. So we knew, we were hoping we might be able to pool the data somehow, but we quickly backed off that. But we can compare those data. So that allows us to compare information, say, in Los Angeles or any county in California, and California and the United States of America. So then, after only a couple rounds of data collection, CHIS had already demonstrated its value to the research community, to policymakers and advocates. So that brought the survey to the attention of the Office of Director as well, and so we co-funded a study to evaluate the impact of CHIS. And as a result, also as a result of the high impact of CHIS, a number of survey leaders or potential survey leaders in other states started to contact Rick in order to find out what he had done to get this survey up and going. How can I do this in my own state was basically their question. And so they were interested in the CHIS model. And since then, since 2007, NCI and UCLA have co-hosted annual Breakfast of Champions, we call them, in which we convene a range of people who are conducting the independent surveys, also people from the national and state BRFAs, and also other federal agencies that have an interest in data collection, such as the National Center for Health Statistics, CDC, NIH. And then in 2010, a larger group of NIH institutes, centers, and offices, as we call them, got together to fund a study to systematically inventory these innovative statewide local health surveys and really see the lay of the land And this research was important because it filled a gap. We really didn't know what kind of local and state data, and particularly statewide local data, was being collected and what kinds of innovations were occurring. So the study that Jennifer presented was the result of that effort. And as we saw, 11 independent surveys identified routinely collecting information on all of the criteria that were required for inclusion in the study that we did. And then we also found that the champions from these 11 independent surveys were interested in harmonizing their data. And they're willing to work towards that goal. They're also very interested in retaining the strengths of their own surveys and ensuring that their own surveys meet the needs of their states and localities. And so I think that's really key things that we found for harmonizing data. Just to conclude here, there's a lot of purposes to which these harmonized data can be put, and I've listed some of them here. Surveillance and tracking, identifying and addressing health disparities at the local level, and generating new hypotheses and research, evaluating the impact of programs and research, disseminating information to targeted populations, and then an important feature, and CHIS has done some of this already, is linking to other local data, because again, now you can see where this is happening. And I think an important study that I'll just mention in closing is a study, the first in this country, to look at whether asthma rates among children were higher among families or children in families living near freeways. And it was found that it was. And that's the kind of thing that you can do at the local level that we can't do with the national data. So I just want to leave in emphasizing the importance of these innovative surveys and the harmonization of those surveys without disrupting their own innovative processes and the local data that they're contributing to the process. And finally, the impact, which is, to me, and I think those of us at the federal level, been quite amazing. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Breen. I'd like to invite the panelists to please come up to the table so we can have a discussion and invite your comments and questions from the audience. We have a few minutes left, and I'd like to use that time. Please just take all those chairs. I'd like to use that time for your questions and having the panelists respond to them and discuss these issues with each other. Unfortunately, we don't have a mic at the table, so I'll have to ask my panelists to speak loudly. Questions? Yes. Did you hear the question in the back? Do I need to repeat it? You heard it. Okay.
They're just Lori. Now starting on that, so I don't have the details on how many different indicators they're going to use, but the idea was to be able to link it to some of the behaviors that you don't have on the other survey. So just to be able to link a physical measure to some of the behavioral things that are available.
One physical measure that I know from our own work and that of others that would be really valuable, and I suppose that BRFIS is going to be including, is going out and measuring the height of children and the weight of children, because these are notoriously erroneously reported by parents, especially for younger kids who are growing quickly and where the last trip to the pediatrician that may have been months ago and the child may not be that weight or height any longer. So that would be an important one. I don't know if BRFIS is doing that.
It's 18 and older.
Well, that's true. Got me there. But it's also fairly, I mean, there are systematic biases in the way adults respond to questions about height and weight, but it would be great to nail them down with some real hard data, too. Another question. Yes. Ed, you're probably the appropriate person to talk about that. Putting you on the spot.
You, it's not likely. The data is guarded, okay, for very, very good reasons. Mm-hmm. Concerns about how it would be used, but at the same time, there's a number of efforts underway toward the sharing of data, toward increasing or put it that way, increasing the sharing of data across the federal agencies. And we're involved, actually, with the Census Bureau and with the Agricultural Research Service in an effort that's actually funded by the OMB to improve and increase the use of administrative data. And that is the height of administrative data, the IRS data. And something down the line, it's possible, but there's a very great concern, particularly about the IRS data, about misuse of information.
I'm going to elaborate a moment on Ed's comments, because there is a huge, there are a lot of barriers to federal agencies sharing data across agencies now. So CMS, with great Medicare data, simply linking data or sharing it with the National Health Interview Survey. This is being done now, but it takes monumental efforts and negotiations and data sharing agreements and acts of Congress to help make that
happen. Well, actually, but it's more than 30 years ago now. Mm-hmm. We actually did it at the National Cancer Institute, linking the SEER data with CMS, wasn't CMS then, Medicare data, and it took a long time to do it, partly because of bureaucratic issues, but in large part because of technical issues. It is not easy to do, and that's the purpose of this new OMB initiative, mm-hmm. is to develop the technical aspects of it, right, to really grease the skids and enable this to take place. But it is there's very good reason for the reticence, mm-hmm. to share data across the agencies.
Right, a lot of privacy protection.
Right. Exactly.
I will tell you from a state perspective, one of the bigger motivators for developing an independent survey, although it could be done with BRFIS as well, is the ability to control the data set and to actually get the data back. So with BRFIS, the states get the data. With the independent surveys, they design the full survey, and they also have ownership of the data. And that's very important to states, to be able to conduct analyses and design the studies and the surveys in the way that serves their needs best. Another question. Yes, in the back.
Is there any efforts to guarantee that indicators for all counties in states will be available in the BRFIS data? Because it's those counties
Lori?
Mm-hmm. Point well taken. I think the problem would be with the stability of the estimates. When you have those smaller numbers, may not be as reliable. But we have had people say we need to have some more data at the lower level. So it's being thought about, but we're still working on that.
This is a big issue with rural counties. In California, we oversample rural counties in the state. In our survey, we have a very large sample. And even with that oversampling, the sample sizes for small counties is often insufficient to produce estimates that people are anxious to have. One of the ways we address that I know BRFIS does as well, or at least has the capability of doing, is to merge samples across years to be able to accumulate data. That's good for certain things that are fairly stable indicators, but where you're interested in rates of change, that's not a very good solution. So we also encourage counties to buy additional oversample in our survey, and many counties do that and use that to help boost the stability and statistical power of their samples. Yes?
Hi, I'm from Washington, D.C., and we're interested in implementing a pediatric surveillance system or pediatric survey. And we've looked at CHAMP, which is the offshoot of the Purpose for Child Health, and because our public health department doesn't feel like it's a good thing to implement, mostly because of response rates and they're afraid of the burden on the population. We can't go that route. So my question to you all is, do you know of any independent state-based surveys that focus on pediatric health that you think we should look at? Because we definitely are interested in harmonizing. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. That being said, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to piggyback on something like birth.
Ed and then Jennifer.
You know, we have something called the State and Local Area Integrated Telephone Survey, which has been used almost exclusively on pediatric populations, from overall health assessment to mental health of children. It's really broken new ground there. We'd be happy. We've actually in the past have talked to the district about potentially cooperative, collaborative efforts, but we really haven't gotten very far. But I'd suggest you call my office, and we would be happy to at least try to be catalytic in it, if not actually directly involved.
I think that the Department of Health, there are some challenges there. I work for Children's National Health.
And Jennifer, in your study of different state surveys, there have been some that have focused on children. Did you want to comment on those?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say, I think it's Iowa that does exclusively a survey of children, but there's a number of the states that we looked at that have child health surveys that either piggyback on the birth, just like you know about, or that are attached to a survey of adults. And those instruments are... We're putting out a report soon on this study, and we have links to those instruments. But you could also look at the states listed and go onto the web and maybe download those instruments if you're interested in looking at technical documentation is often available on the web, and then also the question sets.
In our survey, we do a child sample. So we have a sample of children under the age of 12 that runs about 11,000-12,000 individuals in households throughout California each cycle, and an additional sample of adolescents whom we directly interview with a sample ranging about 3,500 to 4,500 adolescents. And our questionnaires are available on our website and the methodology reports, as Jennifer was describing.
Yeah, and I think it was you had mentioned you had one logo up there about the New York Ed Haynes, which also included children. And one of the discussions we had now, I hate to say it's like a decade ago, was about doing something like that in the district. Something like that certainly could be done to get a set of clinical measurements on children. I was going to say something about cost. Clearly it's costly, but it's nothing like the cost of the NHANES survey to do something.
Everybody I've called on has been on this side of the room. I'm going to move here. And yes, ma'am.
I wanted to know, wanted to state, first of all, that within about 3 years, there will be a multi-payer claims database that the federal government will sponsor, asking CMS. That will cover, will integrate, try to integrate, large commercial insured claims with Medicare, Medicaid, and then several state all-payer claims databases. I'm wondering if any of you could comment on now the harmonization between strong survey data and what we're going to see out of these large claims databases.
Well, I'll just say that actually is one of the things we're really interested in this OMB-sponsored study with Census and NASS. In particular, a component of that, there are three components. One is on health, and it's exactly on are linking to CMS, but of course we would love to link to other databases as well.
I'm involved in a project that is funded by the Agency for Healthcare Quality and Research or research and quality, that is led by a colleague in the UCLA School of Medicine, and it is the intent of it is to create what's called a virtual data laboratory, which draws data from our survey as a population survey, and from claims data and administrative program data, and does it without violating all of the privacy and confidentiality provisions that each of us has in our separate data sets. It's complicated, I'm not going to try to describe it now, but I think these are the kinds of efforts that are moving forward around the country and could be very productive.
And just to add to that, that I and my NIH colleagues are also very interested in that idea of trying to link the population-based data to clinical outcome data, because there's a limited amount of information you can get from the population. For example, in breast cancer, they don't know their results in terms of the BI-RADS, and that's what you need to know in order to decide what the appropriate breast cancer treatment is, for example. So if we could start to, you know, do some sort of matching of actual individuals, and then have population-based data to provide the context as well, that really would be ideal. We'd really start to get a picture of what's happening, ranging all the way from the social determinants of health into a clinical setting and right through the process to mortality, which is what we look at, of course.
Dr. Fine. You probably get the last word because we're over time.
I was actually going to ask a question very similar to what you answered, and that is, to what degree are the multiple private insurance companies' proprietary data a barrier to linking survey data actually with health services data? Has any of you tackled that problem? Maybe this lady has over here.
Would you like to speak to that?
Yeah, Judy is working.
I would like to hear from you, because for us it's a huge barrier. Something that we have not touched yet.
So the first step in this multi-payer claims database is to bring together people, willing partners. Okay? And then it is hoped that as willing partners come together, that others will start to join and we can figure out the concept now is really to develop a virtual database so that the data are owned by the owners, even CMS as well, and that they're used in a virtual way. However, once the MPCD is up and running, the plan by ASCP and CMS is that it will be available for researchers of all different venues, and there will be a way of charging for the data so that it can become a self-sustained resource, and then hopefully more payers will decide they want to participate.
Massachusetts and I think a few other states are developing what they call an all-payer claims database, and as far as I know, there's not a charge for that. But I don't think we've really gotten to the point of knowing yet. But what they've done is all the claims from the entire state are compiled from every single insurance payer. And that's a potentially very rich source of data that's not been mined yet, but it's something that actually exists in Massachusetts and maybe California and some other states. So
we wish we had an all-payer system,
well,
but we don't.
I heard you were getting one.
Ed?
So
one other comment, though. As we have more and more of these data sources, and we will have, there's going to be a need for judgment as to the quality of the data.
Right.
It's going to have to be someone who's able to point out an agency, and it may be federal or it might be non-federal, that's going to be able to say these are the gold standards, so that these can be compared. And CMS data is terrific, but it doesn't necessarily say what's going on in care. So I see this as part of the frontier.
Right.
Okay, and it may be that we will need new data sources that can support the others in terms of some of these key touchstones. Clearly not collecting everything, but we need to better understand how to relate the real gold standards to other data.
I want to thank the Community Health Planning and Policy Development section for sponsoring this, Dr. Amy Carroll Scott, who helped to facilitate that, and a big round of applause for the panel, please. Thank you.